Join the ultimate competition with Bitcoin Halving Challenge presented by Bitcoin Magazine and powered by nitrobetting.eu. This is your chance to predict the future price of Bitcoin during the 2024 halving in April and snag your share of the one Bitcoin prize pool. Join the excitement today. It's free to enter. Put your Bitcoin expertise to the test and make your prediction. Will Bitcoin skyrocket to new heights or make history with a game-changing shift? Enter your guess for free at www.bitcoinhalving.com. That's www.bitcoinhalving.com. Void where prohibited by law. No purchase necessary.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of Bitcoin Magazine Twitter Spaces. I'm your host, Spencer Nichols, and I'm joined by Shinobi, who is our lead technical editor at Bitcoin Magazine, as well as Jeremy Poley, our multimedia producer on the Bitcoin Magazine handle. We're also joined by Charlie Schumacher, the Vice President of Corporate Communications at Marathon, as well as Portland Hoddle. He is a Bitcoin Core developer. Looks like we have Julian here as well, who is the product lead for Slipstream. So I kind of want to kick things off, and I think a really good place to start would be for people to understand the basics of how transactions are submitted to Bitcoin and why Slipstream was a product that actually has a demand. And I think that could kind of illuminate further on, you know, discussing why this was done and helping people understand. So I guess Julian or Portland Hoddle, this might be a good opportunity for you guys to jump in and just kind of give people a brief rundown of how transactions are submitted to Bitcoin and why there's a need for people to be able to facilitate non-standard transactions as is being done through Slipstream.
Yeah, sure. So I guess I would start with that in Bitcoin as a network, you have to engineer around the least common denominator. That's your Raspberry Pi nodes. So that when somebody submits a transaction, that transaction has to be able to be processed by each node along the chain until it gets to a miner. As such, Bitcoin implements what are called standardness policies on transactions, aka if the transaction doesn't fit a certain type, for example, like your pay to tap roots or your regular just like pay to witness script hash, which are like the types of transactions your wallet normally will send, those will all get through. But let's say you try to do something custom, a little bit bigger maybe. For example, in Bitcoin, like using a very large transaction with a bunch of outputs, it will get dropped from the network because basically the nodes along the chain might struggle with that, right? So it gets to the first node, it takes a little bit too long to process. That's not good for that node. But I'll tell you why this isn't actually a problem. So essentially, transaction gets submitted, it goes hop to hop to hop to hop to hop till it gets to a miner. And on the normal route, there's what are called standardness filters. And though that's basically like, we'll take these types of transactions. Think of like going to USPS and giving them a package. If you try to ship like a beach ball or a hazardous material to go anywhere, well, they're probably going to deny it. It's not within their standard rules. What Slipstream does is because of the fact you can directly submit to the miner server, you don't actually have to go across the network. And as such, you're not bound to those same rules of making sure that, okay, well, these transactions fit within this specific type of box. You can take anything that is actually valid Bitcoin consensus at the consensus level. And so that's kind of the opportunity that presented itself because there's demand for this. And with that said, what about all these nodes along the chain that normally can't process these transactions? Well, the nice part about Slipstream is you don't actually have to go through those nodes. Those nodes don't even have to process your transaction. So with that said, you're not like attacking the network or DDoSing it or anything like that because the transaction is going straight from you, the user, right into the miner's mempool directly. Basically, normally transactions, they go hop to hop to hop to hop across the network. With Slipstream, you're literally directly connected to Marathon's mempool to submit whatever type of transaction you would like, whether that be a transaction with 70,000 outpoints or big inscription, like literally whatever. And the goal was to reduce the kind of, actually, I would rather say increase the total set of transactions we can take. We want to take in more transactions because we have found there's demand to pay Bitcoin for these transactions. And essentially, in a nutshell, that should hopefully get that across.
Yeah, no, thanks for that. I think that's a good way to segue us into the conversation. I think just again, for people to understand, this is essentially for people to submit transactions directly by Marathon's Maripool. And I guess the way in which you said it is typically the way that nodes operate is they're not going to accept these larger non-standard transactions, and Marathon is willing to, and they're able to include those in the Bitcoin blockchain because the fact that they operate a mining pool. And I guess Oh, it looks like Julian may have fallen off the stage here, but I kind of wanted to unpack a little bit more too, like, you know, what are these non-standard transactions? What are they being used for? I know you mentioned large inscriptions transactions with a large amount of outputs. Could you speak a little bit more to the types of transactions that are going to be submitted directly via the mining pool or in general, like, you know, what has been submitted already?
So I can't really disclose what's been submitted already. It's a private mempool. But as such, there are a couple use cases for that specific product, mainly if things are, I guess, in all reality, I don't know all the use cases that people could come up with for non-standard transactions. I would say that the largest demand has for the block space that Marathon sells has been for inscriptions. So with that, you can just kind of go along with like the Taproot Wizards kind of thing that they did with a very large wizard, right? Normally that would not go across the network, but you could also use it for very cool things. For example, like BitVM in like a justice transaction, you could then prove a much larger size because you're not bound to the limit of the 400 kilobytes. Op returns as well. So normally in Bitcoin, you can do only an 80 byte op return. And now you can put up to 10 kilobytes of data in that. So yeah, there are a bunch of uses. And my thing was to increase the total amount of things that people can do on Bitcoin. And hopefully somebody can use that as a way to develop something very creative, unique, novel, and beneficial to Bitcoin. And in essence, maybe not do JPEGs, please. But at the same time, as a miner, if we're going to open up our mempool to one type of data, we have to open it up for all types of data. I don't want to be the arbiter of you're good, you're bad. We are here to essentially increase the number of transactions we can take at the end of the day.
Got it. Shinobi, I see you have your hand raised there. Feel free to hop in.
So quick question, Portland, because I'm actually not sure about this, but is the ancestor limit part of standardness policies, or is that like its own mempool check?
That is a mempool check. And yes, the default descendant limit is 25. We have kept that in our version of Bitcoin Core. We didn't extend that out. So you can still only go 25 deep with your descendants.
Okay. That makes me very happy because I just realized here moment ago that if you could violate the ancestor limit, things would get very interesting for pinning attacks.
Yeah, I definitely, in terms of the modifications I actually did to the template generator, the Bitcoin Core instance that builds our blocks, I optimized a few things in terms of performance, but the actual restrictions basically all came from one place, just kind of getting rid of is standard and the size limit. So that really, at the end of the day, there wasn't too many changes. The majority of the work actually was invalidating that this couldn't cause us to mine an invalid block, because that's always the biggest risk with a service like this is, okay, somebody submits something, it gets in your mempool, but it's not actually valid Bitcoin. And then you work on this work, and then suddenly you mine the block, you submit the hash, and then, it got rejected by the network. And you lose money, first of all. But second, the fact is that I think morally, I don't want to be the guy responsible for wasting that much energy, right? So I put a lot of time into making sure that this implementation was really, really durable overall, I guess I'd say.
All right, and I guess another quick question. As everybody will slowly realize, I am not that deeply familiar with the specific standardness policies. But am I correct in that pay to script hash, like witness reveals, used to be and possibly still are bound to like specific templates like multisig, and it wasn't just like a complete free for all of you can construct any arbitrary script?
To some degree, you can still construct quite a few arbitrary scripts. But for example, if you're going to use like opcheck multisig inside of a pay to script hash, you're still bound to the consensus limits of Bitcoin and kind of the stack limits, et cetera, for that those types of transactions. So there are still limits in what you can craft inside of these other types of transactions, like a pay to script hash or a P2TR. The standardness policies really only affect the actual script pub key. So that is basically the thing that is in the output of the transaction. So like, for example, your old legacy pay to script hash transactions, that little check for the script hash, that that actual check, you can change it. You can do other things in there. You can put an op true. You can do an op nop. You can basically craft whatever you want in that section of the Bitcoin transaction.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Awesome. Looks like we have Julian back up here as well. Julian, I guess Port of the Huddle was just giving us a rundown of the types of transactions that are going to be processed by Slipstream and just kind of the fundamentals behind how the standardness policy functions in this implementation of Bitcoin Core. But I guess, did you have anything else you wanted to add before we move on? I kind of also just wanted to explore, why Marathon is doing this as a strategic initiative and would pass it along to Charlie. But Julian, I wanted to give you the opportunity to jump in here and, share a little bit more about the work you've done on Slipstream if you'd like.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for the opportunity to invite Spencer.
Of course.
I think Slipstream, it's one attempt of many of Marathon trying to really boost the utility of Bitcoin. And I think that on the Bitcoin network, you have a lot of innovation happening on main chain. You have a lot of innovation happening elsewhere. And there's a lot of opportunity to be able to support builders to basically transact in new ways that we haven't yet seen. And Slipstream is Marathon's contribution to that ecosystem. And I think traditionally the role of miners is that of securing the network and basically limiting themselves to doing that. But Marathon, more than anything else, is attempting to reach beyond that. And on the technology team here at Marathon, we have found a number of creative ways to do that. And I think Slipstream is a very good example. And so recent team have really worked a great deal, have very been plugged into the community, and I think have pushed out a product that, as Twitter is showing and more news to come will show even greater, we want to be at the forefront of innovation for Bitcoin. It's as simple as that. And I think Slipstream is a small contribution, but a very important one on a longer journey.
Yeah, and I think Portland Hoddle mentioned earlier using this Slipstream product as a means of interacting with BitVM. And I guess that kind of opens the question to me is, like, obviously you guys have mentioned innovation being an important part of this, being able to foster that innovation. But I think, as everyone knows, like, the game theory around Bitcoin mining is very much based upon incentives. And I think that there is an incentive for profit maximization. And I think that that makes sense. If Marathon is able to generate a revenue from this service, then they'll go ahead and provide that, provided it aligns with Bitcoin consensus. But Charlie, I wanted to give you the opportunity here to talk about kind of that, how you guys are thinking about this initiative. Is it purely a profit maximization play from the mining side? Do you guys see a value on its own of Marathon supporting innovation regardless of those types of incentives? Just kind of curious how you're thinking about this strategic initiative here.
Yeah, good question for sure. So I would say I'll speak to this like specifically, and then I'll kind of answer the question a little more broadly. So transaction fees we've seen this across the network, but depending on what's going on, they can end up being like a material amount of a Bitcoin miner's revenue. So for example, in December, where we had kind of this big spike in transaction fees, for Marathon, we earned 380 Bitcoin in transaction fees just in that month, which was 22% of our total production. So we know that just like from his like past events that transaction fees matter immensely to, or they potentially could, to the total revenue and then therefore bottom line of a mining company. And especially if you think, that one of the really interesting things about mining is that, like, because of halving cycles, it is an immensely competitive industry. And the longer we go down this road and we play this game, the more creative we all have to get about finding ways to stay in business and stay alive. And that's how, like, Bitcoin is, like, designed, right? Most of it works and is designed around economic incentives. Miners, for the most part, like, they can, I mean, mining pools can choose to compile blocks in different ways, but for the most part, they go after the highest transaction fees. So I think philosophically, this is just aligned with those concepts. And as a business, we don't know exactly. I mean, I'd love to be able to say, like, here's the total addressable market of all transaction fees, and here's the percentage that, we think we might be able to capture. But the reality is we don't know, because this is growing so much. And when you add functionality like this, it could have a small impact. It could have a very large impact over time on the potential transaction fees that a miner like Marathon could earn. So I do view it as, like, there's a component of this that is at least with this initiative, that like, yes, makes sense for sure for us from a business perspective. But there's another piece of this that's also the larger picture, which is that we have a very large invested stake in the Bitcoin ecosystem. We're the second largest holder of Bitcoin among publicly traded companies. We're the largest miner, certainly within North America. So that means that we have dedicated a huge amount of capital and spent a lot of time basically doing nothing except processing transactions and trying to secure Bitcoin's network. And so there is this component that anything that we can do to help grow Bitcoin and help better the network ends up benefiting us. It does benefit everyone else as well, but it's like a rising tide lifts all boats. So there are things that we specifically look at that do benefit Marathon very directly. I think this is one of these initiatives, but it also ties to this broader concept of what else can we do that's creative that maybe is beneficial to the network on a whole, or that helps provide tools to people who are working on building the future of Bitcoin that might benefit the entire ecosystem and network that also ends up benefiting us. And there's some other things along those lines, like in line with that philosophy that we've been working on, which I think you'll see us announcing like sometime in the next few weeks here.
Got it. Yeah, and I think in the context of zooming out a little bit more to understand, you know, where this trend might go, I think that if you kind of take this idea of Marathon using the Marapool to have people submit non-standard transactions directly to Bitcoin, I think it kind of makes me wonder, you know, what is the future of the Bitcoin mempool going to be like? What are the downstream effects of this type of behavior from individuals and from mining pools? And I'm just kind of curious, you know, Shinobi, you could maybe jump in here too, but, you know, what does this mean for the future of the Bitcoin mempool? How fees are going to be estimated, and generally how people will interact with Bitcoin going forward? Is this going to be, you know, limited to very niche use cases on a fairly rare basis, or is this going to be something that becomes kind of standard operating procedure going forward? I'm just kind of curious to hear people's thoughts on, if we look down the road a little bit, where this trend might go.
Well, if I could jump in real quick, it's actually kind of my one concern with this is, you know, obviously looking at use cases like ordinals and inscriptions, we've seen that there is not a perfectly constant market demand, but a very significant one for making these types of transactions, especially some of the larger ones that violate standardness policy. There really is no option but to go directly to a pool. And I think that that can have a lot of negative incentive distortions on the kind of state of mining centralization. And the only real way to get around that is to effectively find a way for these transactions to freely propagate on the open network. So I'm kind of wondering, what are your guys' long-term thoughts or plans on allowing just kind of general public nodes on the network who run similar policies? Like, we have the Libra Relay fork now, to peer with your node and kind of begin the process of extending this out into a more public mempool with looser policy?
That is an awesome question that I have thought about a lot. And so at the end of the day, right now, the Slipstream or our template generator is basically behind standard nodes. So AKA, we have we call them pool filters, right? And then these nodes send only standardness transactions or standard transactions to our mempool through the default relay. The only way a non-standard transaction propagates is through the actual portal itself. So right now, if a Libra relay node connected to any of those nodes, it wouldn't do anything, right? Because their transaction would still get dropped. The reason for this wasn't because I don't want these transactions to not enter a mempool. It's actually, I was more concerned about like the DOS vectors or DDoS vectors. Like, how could people potentially stop Marathon from generating templates or slow down the template generation process? If that ends up becoming a non-factor, I personally, of course, we're at the decision-making of the rest of the company, et cetera, would like to see nodes like Libra Relay connect to our node to submit transactions that have policy that might be a little bit looser than the standardness policy in Bitcoin Core. And the reason for that is there is demand for these types of transactions. And again, back to the miner incentives, we do want to earn more per hash than what the default template allows. Like, we always want to be earning as much as possible per hash because that makes us more efficient. Also, it, just on a personal note, I think it also is a little bit of censorship resistance in a way because of the fact that you're not filtering out creative ways of doing things on Bitcoin.
Yeah, if I could just add to Reese's response, I think when it comes to the profit incentive underlying proof of work, fundamentally, things that further that profit incentive, things that cement that profit incentive are very important for network security. You know, at the end of the day, Bitcoin is both a technological leap forward. It's also a matching of incentives in a very carefully crafted way where people seeking profit can secure a network that then brings financial freedom to all. And so I think in that vein, if Slipstream is furthering that profit motive and giving more channels for transactors to incentivize miners to secure the network with these transactions that fundamentally don't violate Bitcoin core consensus, we're furthering that profit motive, we're bolstering proof of work. And so the incentives, in my view, align very well with what Bitcoin is all about.
Yeah, and if I would also just tack on to that, it's like, I think like all of us want mining to be a thing in the future, right? It's a very core component of like how Bitcoin functions. And as block rewards decrease over time, so this is like how we think about it from the miner's perspective as like a business. Yes, we're bullish on Bitcoin, obviously, right? We hold a lot. We wouldn't be in the industry if we weren't. But you don't know exactly where the price is going to go. And you can't really like base your business assuming that Bitcoin's going to $1 million. And so I think if you want mining to be around, then there's kind of like two ways that that works long time, given that the block reward gets cut in half every 4 years. One is the price of Bitcoin has to more than offset that, or transaction fees have to go up some way, right? But there has to be a way that mining can stay profitable. The other option, obviously, is also that miners themselves become way more efficient with better technology. They search for free energy, stuff like that, which is also things we're pursuing. But I would think that, like, at least the way I look at it, is anything that you can do to make mining more profitable and more economically sustainable long term is probably a good thing for the market. And I think it's also important to like note, and maybe Julian and Portland, you guys can hop in on this one, but like, it's not like the service is designed for everybody. It's not like we envision that the average person is going to be submitting transactions directly to Marathon. I mean, I think that maybe there's like some diehard people who love Marathon out there who would like to do it because it's a cool novel thing, but like it's way cheaper and probably much more effective for people to directly submit through the mempool. This is like designed for much more specific use cases. So I don't know if it's really just us trying to like, as Portland mentioned, kind of like decrease censorship and add some functionality for more folks. But I don't know if Julian or Portland, you want to speak to like what types of people or transactions you might use Slipstream for versus like when you should just go directly to the regular mempool.
Yeah, Julian or Portland, feel free to jump in here.
Okay. Portland, lead.
Yeah. So there are two reasons you could technically use Slipstream, like in terms of the use cases. One is you want to directly do something that is not standard. So let's just use the example of a big transaction, maybe an exchange payout takes a bunch of outpoints, right? Then yeah, that would work for you. The other thing is it offers a private mempool. So anything that gets submitted through Slipstream does not get broadcast to the rest of the network. And as such, basically you can just submit something to Marathon and nobody has to know that you're doing that on the Bitcoin network. So I don't quite know the exact use cases of that, but at the same time, like I could see like some interesting ways you could do that. For example, you could remove the script op check sig. So you can remove the signature check, assuming that you trust Marathon not to take the coins, and two, that the block isn't going to get orphaned, but for very small amounts, that might be a way to actually make things a little bit more efficient. And removing the non-standardness from transactions actually has an effect where you can make these arbitrary data transactions slightly more efficient because you're not bound to making sure you add in these little extra steps to make them fit within the standardist models get propagated across the network. So it can actually lead to more efficient or basically less bloat of the bloat, I guess I would say. But there is, of course, paying above a market rate for that.
Well, if I can step in and ask a question / press you guys a little bit. Do you have any like concrete like timetables or specific plans in terms of trying to like open up ways for the wider network to peer with your node running this policy? Because, you know, I doubt this is going to happen overnight, and I don't even want to try to speculate on what the use case would be. But if this does lead to like a widely adopted, highly demanded like class of transactions using your API, that could have a lot of detrimental effects on other users, in the sense of like if there was a massive flood of these transactions into your node's mempool, like above the currently seen like top fee rate on the network, users not aware of those transactions would be totally unaware until the next block you mine came in, that like these are even something they have to consider in terms of their fee estimation. And that could kind of exacerbate itself, you know, the larger your pool grows or the more pools like create similar services, if we don't have some kind of public relay network between everything that people can plug into and gain visibility into those transactions.
Yeah, if I could just answer there. I think it's important maybe to give some context on how Marathon's technology team builds products here, because I think that'll answer your question very well, Shinobi. We're not trying to be prescriptive, and we're trying to further experimentation. And so what do I mean by that? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, this is something Portland has told me a number of times, but Bitcoin is an exercise in social consensus. And as one of the largest Bitcoin holders, naturally, we have a very big stake in protecting that social consensus, protecting the frameworks as they stand. We are taking an iterative approach with Slipstream, you know, where we are starting with a this service that allows you to directly submit transactions. If this ends up distorting, incentives, and in particular, ends up in, you know, adversely affecting the rest of the Bitcoin community, we're taking an iterative approach with it in mind that it's important to protect that delicate social consensus and take steps to reverse in the event that, you know, the certain incentive structures are broken. And that's how we operate from day one. So the goal isn't to be prescriptive and launch a service and sort of have Marathon's way, you know, whatever that may be. We ultimately are user driven. And so, you know, let's see how these incentives play out. The particular world you're describing is one that me and every single person in Marathon does not want to see. We absolutely do not want to impact everyday users and, you know, distort the ability to use Bitcoin at scale, of course. But we need to also experiment, right? We need to open the floodgates for innovators to try new ways of transacting. And, you know, as there might be risks of sometimes with experimentation going down wrong paths, but we're more than open, willing, and prepared to get back on that right path should that happen.
Absolutely.
So that's the nature of experimentation.
I can bring up one thing about Slipstream. So you mentioned, Shinobi, like that the impacts of what we do could potentially affect everyday users. And the answer I used to that question or give to that question is that we unfortunately, like, I guess I wish we had more hash rate, but in all reality, we mine roughly a block every 12 to 8 hours. So we get four or five blocks a day, right? And as such, even if our mempool became completely backlogged with these types of transactions, I don't think we would have a large and meaningful impact on the broader network in terms of getting transactions through. And then second, the actual demand for the service, I would say overall, yes, there has been demand, but it's not incredibly high. It's pretty marginal, actually. This was more just an exercise as we were going through our pool to see, like, okay, what ways can we let people innovate on Bitcoin? How can we improve our pool? How can we increase the amount we're earning per hash? And second, like, how can we improve Bitcoin Core downstream as well? Like, these improvements or modifications I'm making to Bitcoin Core, I fully intend to submit as PRs for not the removing of the standardist policy, but there's all sorts of little nuances in, for example, like get block template that have been improved. So I want to push those downstream potentially. And overall, that at the end of the day, this was an exercise really of understanding mempool policy, earning more revenue, and improving Bitcoin and fulfilling kind of my idea that we should be ready to take all types of transactions. And just sorry to go down the rabbit hole all the way. There was a video that Gloria Zhao posted. She was doing a lecture at MIT, and she describes what is the perfect mempool. And the perfect mempool is described as a mempool that can actively receive any type of transaction and validate it. And the worst type of mempool is a whitelisted mempool where it's only their trusted peers. And that was kind of a little bit of a motivator or looking at that. I wanted to create kind of the perfect mempool. And because we have the processing power at our template generator, yeah, that was my idea. And as per just like letting the general public and the timeline to connect to that node, I would say that I would not, as of right now, just go, okay, I'm just ready to open it up. Here's the IP address. I would want to partner with select people to see kind of like, what are the realities of doing this? Because I understand that I don't know everything even myself, right? Like I kind of architected this, but at the same time, there are so many variables from a technical perspective and a social perspective that come up with these kind of things. And it's leading to innovation. That is the main thing. It's, we are building on Bitcoin. Okay, Shinobi.
Well, yeah, I wasn't trying to imply that like right now at your current hash rate that you guys could cause this type of distortion. I'm just trying to game this out forward. Like the instant there is any material demand demonstrated, this is going to be copied by every pool out there. And well, can so I ask you? We have the situation of like everybody has one of these APIs, but everybody's private mempool is still private. So like the natural way to kind of counteract that effect would be for all of the pools, like private mempools, to essentially link together and offer a way for average users' nodes to connect to that so that they have like a view of all these types of transactions.
There's also an alternative as well, right? If there's material demand for a specific type of transaction that is non-standard, I think it almost falls on Bitcoin Core a little bit to determine whether or not that transaction is acceptable across nodes. Like, can you relay it across Raspberry Pis and potentially modify their standardist policy to allow that to happen so that miners can't get an advantage here? This only technically works because of the fact the standardist policy exists and is relatively tight. And there's demand right now for things outside of standardist policy, whether it be a developer that builds a custom script that just wants to try something out, or somebody wanting to create a digital asset on Bitcoin. There's so many different ways you can use transactions, and you can't explore any of those things right now because you can't even get them relayed across the network. But at the same time, that fact the filters are this tight did technically lead to the ability for Marathon to say, hey, go above the market rate because you can do your experimentation. You can actually try this idea out. So I would say that, yeah, if it does come down to that eventually, Nifty Nays, she wrote a piece on the mailing list, Death to the Mempool. That's basically kind of the exact future that was described. Is literally miners just create APIs. You can pull Marathon, you can pull Foundry and get your market rates for those from the private mempools. Our rate is shown on the Slipstream portal, what we are currently high priority is for our mempool. So if you're ever concerned that Marathon might be a little bit more and you want to make sure that you can get into there one block every 4 hours too, check maybe the Slipstream website and put your fee up just a little bit higher. I genuinely don't think the amount of demand will have any material impact on the average fee of our block right now. And if this does continue, because remember, this is a project. If this does become problematic, we will address those problems and engineer to either make it better or, I mean, like I've even stated myself, and I don't represent Marathon wholly, but if this is a net negative and we're on the wrong side of Bitcoin, which I do not believe by any means we are, but if there's something that comes up and I realize like, okay, this is not good, we're not going to continue it. It's not worth killing Bitcoin to try to make more per block. That is my own opinion though.
I mean, Portland, I love you. Sorry, Julie, real quick, but like the idea that Core would loosen its mempool policies to go along with this is assuming that people will be rational adults, and that's not the world we live in.
Well,
so the next best thing is we build a new mempool.
Yeah, potentially. And the other thing I wanted to say as well is Marathon has no intent on ever violating consensus rules. Like, consensus is king. We are not ever going to go against consensus. With that said, if people really do want to filter specific types of transactions, in my own opinion, the best route is to change consensus. That would make sure that services like this could not work, right? Like, if consensus was that you couldn't do over a 400 kilobyte Taproot transaction, Slipstream couldn't enable that. We don't have enough hash rate. We're not going to try to violate consensus rules. And as such, yeah, like, consensus changes would meaningfully impact this. Relay policy is this kind of, like, in my own opinion, a bit of a, like, a half step. Like, it does technically work when there's no demand for a type of transaction, but as soon as there's demand for a specific type of transaction that's being filtered by these standardness policies, that becomes basically people attempt to find routes to get those transactions and they pay extra on top to do that. That's all.
Yeah, and just to add, I think with the with regard to demand, I think we also need to keep in mind that we can't be prescriptive about the type of demand that we're going to see on a decentralized open network, right? And so at the end of the day, it's we want to keep obviously everything within within Bitcoin consensus rules, as you know Portland just stated, consensus is king. That is the ultimate limit. But if demand ends up taking us in a very different direction, I mean, look, the Bitcoin network today is very different than it was 10 years ago, and so on. And it may change in the next 10 years. The most important thing we can do is continue to stay at the forefront of innovation, continue finding new ways that this beautiful Bitcoin network that we have together created can continue serving market needs. And so if we see that the market starts having needs that are extend beyond the needs that we see today, let's not try to stifle that demand if it's not going against consensus. That's at the end of the day how I see it. And yeah, again, furthering Portland's point, we're not creating something that's set in stone. And it's also not necessarily a very easy thing to replicate. I will say that the last few weeks of sleepless nights on Portland and the rest of the engineering team's plate would easily show to anybody, this isn't a simple thing that one can easily replicate. In the long term, yes, you know, things can be replicatable. In the long term, technology moats are not as strong as we would say, but, you know, also in the long term, as Keynes would say, we're all dead. So, you know what I mean? Let's stick to reality today and let's see where that demand is today, build toward it, and see what beautiful things come out of it.
I want to put out one thing, that what we're doing is technically nothing that's even really new. F2 Pool, for example, has been doing non-standard transactions for well over 6 years. Like, they have done more non-standard transactions than any pool in existence. They're the ones that created, like, the first transaction with, like, 3,000 inputs. They've been doing this for a very long time. Luxor, as of, I believe, last year, started accepting non-standard transactions. So what is Marathon that's doing that's even different than all this? Our goal is just make it accessible. These other platforms currently, they're kind of like on a DM basis, right? Like, okay, you can message Luxor or F2 Pool and say, like, I got this transaction, Hex. And then they'll look at your Hex and go, okay, well, we kind of like this one. It's paying good fee. I'll put it in my block, you know, like this, like, you're chosen. My goal was to open this up to the public. So there's no more of this. You're the chosen one. Anybody can do this process to test whatever they want, build whatever they want, but you're going to pay a little extra if you want to go through this. And then there's also the debate where somebody challenged Rob Hamilton to send them one Satoshi. And Rob eventually got it through, right? So he did. He went to F2 Pool. But the process was an absolute pain to do something that is so simple. It's just a type of transaction that's got to get into a mempool. It's not dangerous to anybody's mempool. It's a very small transaction. I just went, why does this have to be so hard for Rob to just send somebody a transaction with an op return and a single Satoshi? Like, so yeah, at the end of the day, yeah, it's accessibility is, in my own opinion, the only difference to what we're offering compared to the broader market right now. So
yeah, I think that's really good context there, like knowing that this isn't necessarily something new, although the way in which it's being accessed is new. And I guess, Charlie, I kind of want to give you an opportunity to take us out here and just kind of, if people want to learn more about Slipstream, any changes with it, or just kind of keeping up with the latest news, I just kind of want to give you the opportunity to talk about, you know, how they could reach out to Marathon if they want to learn more, or, you know, where's a good place to stay updated.
Yeah, thanks. So, I mean, our socials handles are probably the best way to stay up to date on, like, daily things. If anyone's got direct questions, they're more than happy to email us. We have our email addresses are listed on the website, but like info@mara.com works great. Those actually all go to me, so I'll respond to you if you email me. Outside of that, also just keeping track on stuff that we're going to be announcing, or just check out the website. It's kind of a staging site at the moment, but there'll be a little more information on there probably within the next few days. And that's probably the those are probably the best ways to stay up to date. So give us a follow if you have direct questions, you know, shoot us an email, shoot us a DM too, that works too. Or just kind of follow slipstream.mara.com. And then the last thing I would just kind of want to close with from my side would be just something that Portland and Julian have been, I think, highlighting, but I think is really important, is just the way that we approach a lot of this stuff. Because Marathon's been working on a ton of things in the background, and I think you're going to see quite a few announcements from us over the next even just month, is we have, no one knows exactly what the future of Bitcoin looks like, ourselves included. We have opinions about what might work. We have ideas. Lots of people do. Our belief is that those ideas should all go out there and be tested. Let's put things out into the market. Let's see what works. Let's see what doesn't. Let's iterate. Let's adjust. And let's all work through that together. So that's our general kind of philosophy on launching services, products, ideas. And to Julian's point, not all of them are going to work. We've certainly launched things in the past that have not been popular and have not worked. And we've walked them back and we've changed course on that. So, you know, this something that's really exciting about this. I love that concept of like Bitcoin is an experiment in social consensus. We're all working on this together. And we think we've got some smart people on the team who have opinions, who really love and care about Bitcoin. And so, you know, we're going to keep launching stuff that we think is cool and interesting and helpful. And then we're going to get feedback and iterate from there. And hopefully everyone else is doing the same thing. Because we're all trying, at the end of the day, we're all trying to make Bitcoin successful. And I think that's one of the great things about market dynamics and about this industry is that we all have different ideas and we can test that, but we're all working on the same mission. So that's what I'll end with.
Awesome. Thanks. Yeah. And I totally agree. I mean, I think for me, like making Bitcoin successful is essentially just making markets successful. I mean, that, for me, that's one of the more inspiring things about this is, you know, what are the downstream impacts of that as far as how people can express value and what that does to our economics. That's a whole rabbit hole. We don't need to go down now. But again, really appreciate everyone taking the time to chat today. We're kind of at our allotted time right now, but definitely encourage people to reach out to the Marathon team if they have any questions or just want to learn more. And personally, looking forward to seeing, you know, what this results in. I think it's opened up an important dialogue, especially from the perspective that Marathon is publicly traded. I think it's just, you know, there's a lot more visibility into this type of product than there was previously, as you mentioned, with F2 Pool. So yeah, I mean, personally, really looking forward to seeing, you know, what y'all put out going forward. But if anyone has any last words, you know, feel free to share them here or we can wrap things up. Thanks, y'all. Cool. I'll take that as Portland. You got something to say?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you. Yeah, thank you for hosting the Space Bitcoin Magazine and letting me kind of talk about my little pet project, Marathon. And the whole team at Marathon worked their butts off, from the comms team to the engineering teams. Everybody just absolutely kicked butt on this project. And yeah, overall, again, this is it's still a project, right? And as such, we're open to community feedback and we're looking to see the different ways and we're actively monitoring basically every aspect of this to make sure that we want to be on the right side of Bitcoin long term. And I believe we are. And the free market always ends up winning out in the end of the day. But still, if there's some downstream effect or some knock on that we didn't anticipate, that this is what we're trying to see from this whole thing. So
yeah, the only thing I'll add is on this point of feedback, guys, I really think that the crypto community often struggles with that point. We interpret feedback as, you know, fighting words, or that we want to disagree immediately. I really want to create a culture with this product and with others that are soon to come of feedback where the community feels open and accepted to really talk about what exactly they think of what we're building. You know, you can't be iterative if you're not listening to people, and we really want to listen. So thank you so much, you know, Spencer and the rest of the Bitcoin Magazine team for organizing the spaces. I look forward to talking to every single person who wants to share their opinions and comments on this project and who has ideas for where it can go. You know, maybe we're making a wrong step, or maybe we're making the best step, the exact step that Bitcoin needs. We only get that through talking to one another. So I'm looking forward to collaborating with the rest of this community on the exciting roadmap to come.
Real quick, I'm going to point out one thing. The Slipstream portal to actually submit your transaction hex will officially open Monday. And the reason why, we got a few little things planned across the next couple of days. So yeah, I'm assuming these probably will hit Twitter and you guys will see them. And hopefully you guys all enjoy it quite a bit. But yeah, overall, the actual submission service right now is currently pending. The backend does work. It's just, I got a couple little things I want to make sure get demonstrated with this. Shinobi?
Death to the mempool. Long live the mempool.
Ack.
Awesome. Yeah, couldn't agree more, guys. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today and everyone for listening. Yeah, thanks, Shinobi, Jeremy, Charlie, Portland Hoddle, and Julian. Looking forward to hearing more about this going forward. But have a great Friday, everyone. Talk soon.